everybody's getting ready for, I've written down some questions, so for a lot of time for discussion. Karen's going to be presenting on building standards and best practices, global health experiences for pre-health students.
Thank you. Only it's Tricia. That's okay.
Oh, I'm sorry, Tricia. I apologize.
Okay, I like new
Karen
names.
Listed. It's Tricia Todd. I apologize.
Karen was my colleague, so I have no relationships to disclose, so I will move quickly into this. Karen is one of my colleagues, as is Dr. Jess Everett. And I wanted to just mention them because they've been working with me on a variety of these projects for a number of years. You're going to see some overlap between the previous session and mine. In fact, I'm smiling because I have the WADE standards in here as well. I work at the University of Minnesota. We have the largest, no, not the largest, I think we're the third largest academic health center in the country. And I work in the Office of Education there, as well as I work in the Health Careers Center, which works with our undergraduate students. So I work across the undergraduate population all the way into the professional population. And I'm a liaison to our Learning Abroad Center on campus. How many of you are familiar with a Learning Abroad Center or a Study Abroad Center? Okay. They generally serve undergraduate populations and not professional, and we're in the process right now of trying to figure out how to use some of the models and methods that the undergraduate study abroad programs do in our academic health center as we create the Center for Global Health and Social Responsibility. So we know that there's a growing interest, as has been mentioned by all of these folks, in the professional level, but that interest is not exclusive to the professional school students. It's also in undergrads, and it's incredibly high number of students that come into universities and want to go abroad and have experiences. There's a number of different models that are out there that they can get involved in, both inside their university and outside of their university. Service organizations, education organizations, research opportunities, academic, non-governmental organizations, secular, non-government, faith-based, and I bring that one up for a particular reason because a lot of students go abroad and don't realize when they're making choices who they're going with that they might be endorsing some of the belief systems of those organizations and to be aware of that before they make their choices. So why do students go abroad? And this is probably true across both undergraduate and professional students, but they want to learn about different cultures, they want to gain a sense of confidence, you know, resilience, adaptability, all of these things that they want. But when you talk to pre-health students, they want to go abroad because they want new and different experiences that are really going to help them be competitive in getting into these health profession programs. And anyone that works in a health profession program knows that they're becoming more and more competitive. We have, I think last year there were 44,000 applicants to medical schools in this country, and the number of people getting in was around 19,000. So you get about a 50-50 chance of getting into a medical school, and they think, wow, if I go abroad and get these experiences, then I'm going to stand out and be somebody they'll want in their program. These are the kinds of experiences that they're looking to have. Now, I remind you that these are undergrads. They have not gone through professional training. Okay, these are undergrads. And these are actual things that these students are doing. They're doing these things as undergrads. Okay, I read about them. I talk to them. I have plenty of stories. Yep, they are undergrads. Here's one of the cases. These are direct out of personal statements for application to medical school or public health or undergrads. These are your future doctors. I hope it scares you as much as it did me. So we began asking the question on our campus at the University of Minnesota, you can't do it in this country. Why should you be doing it in another country? This doesn't seem quite right. And I started asking people around the campus, colleagues of mine who are physicians and public health professionals, one who's in the audience, Dr. Jim Hart, does this sound right to you? Does this make sense? And then I went over to our Learning Abroad Center and said, are you guys hearing any of this? Oh yeah, they're hearing it too. So we went out and we did kind of what my previous speaker here did. we started reading in the literature and going, well, is there anything out there? Is there anything out there that talks about that this is wrong? And we found a few things. But we wanted to articulate why we thought it was a problem. And we know that there's an increased competition for these professional programs. There's kind of a justification among undergrad students because there's so many of them going abroad and doing this that everybody's doing it. Everyone's doing it. I can do it because everybody else is doing it. And we hear this all the time, especially when they get into the settings around the world that, well, students from other parts of the country are doing these things and they're competing for the same medical schools or public health schools that I'm competing with, so I have to compete with them on the ground. There is a lack of uniformity among admissions committees, and this is one that concerns me. I've had physicians on admissions committees read about students being involved in, you know, performing surgeries and saying, wow, very good, good job. And it's like, wait a minute, really? Do you mean that? And an increase in organizations that can make money. And believe me, this is a big one. They are popping up right and left. Our safety officer on campus just sent me one 2 days ago and said, have you heard of this organization? We are getting more and more organizations that are coming up out of the woodwork that are offering these opportunities for students. Go abroad, get hands-on experience. You know, now what I'm seeing is one of the organizations that I was having a conversation with a couple of years ago has changed their literature on the front page, so it doesn't say that they're going to get hands-on experience. But when you go behind it and you read about the experiences and students endorsing it, they're still having the experiences. So why should you care? Well, I think you should care because there's potential harm for the patients. There's potential harm to the students. You've got legal issues with the local authorities. You've got damage to your whole, you know, your own institution. And in my case, you're putting students, acceptance into these programs at risk. So I think you have to consider that. No, these are not true. But this is the slide I gave to our safety officer, and I said, do you want to see this?
Good.
Because it's only a matter of time. So what did we do at the University of Minnesota? We took what I consider a public health approach. That's my background. So we figured we need an education approach and a policy approach. The education approach resulted in an online tool for training that I'll talk to you about. And the policy approach I'll also mention. When we were going through the articles to see what articles were really relevant to what we were trying to do, this was one of them that I strongly endorse. I think that Pinto and Upshur really get at the heart of some of the challenges in global health experiences and some of the methodologies that should be used when putting these experiences together that really address the social justice issues. And I'm sure you guys came across those. But here's the weight guidelines. And I did talk to both Crump and Sugarman before when we were doing our effort. And I asked them about the weight standards, and they said, oh, yeah, they're good. They'll be good for both undergrads and professional students. And I, too, went in and read them, and I went, oh, I feel like we need more specificity than this. This isn't quite as deep as I think we're going to need for undergraduate audience. Now we're seeing that a few of the professional associations are coming out with their own guidelines, saying this is what you should be doing as a medical student going abroad, and the Association of American Medical Colleges has it, as does the ADA. So we looked at some best practices that we thought were important, and we want programs, especially for undergrads, to really identify that these students are going as learners, not doers. We want the program to communicate the student's role to the local host, and to be able to address that, because I think one of the things a lot of people don't understand is medical education everywhere else in the world is basically at the level of our undergraduate students. So if you're coming out of your training in what we consider high school, you go directly into medical school every place else in the world. And it's called undergraduate medical education, as is our undergraduate medical education here. But our students are in undergraduate education, and many of them call themselves undergraduate pre-meds. Well, that gets very confusing to a lot of our host countries, because to them, this student is the same age as the medical students they're getting from European countries and other places, and so they think they're fully trained. They think that they're at least trained to the level that these other students from elsewhere around the world are. So that creates a sense of confusion. We want to emphasize observation and anthropological approaches, professionalism, some of those things that we know they're going to need when they get into the health professions. And we also want to equip students to say no. And this one was a big one, because as we talked to students actually all over the country, that was the number one thing they said is, you know, I'm standing there in a hospital and this doctor says, no, go ahead and do this. Go ahead and, you know, practice your suturing. I don't know how to say no to them. And, you know, for some of us, we're thinking, well, you just say no. But these are undergraduate students, and they're not used to saying no to someone in authority. So one of the things we did from an education perspective is we created an online tool, and this tool just became available free anywhere. We had originally created it, and our university said, no, you must charge for it. And we fought that for 2 years, and we finally were able to make it free and available to anyone anywhere. So we created this tool. We have gotten a lot of reviews done on this, and it is continuing to improve. And so I invite you not just only to go in and look at it, but give us feedback on it. Tell us where we need to make changes, where there's missing information, where there's information that might be inaccurate. We've had some tremendous input from all over the world on this, and so we're slowly improving it. And as was mentioned previously, we're also creating a toolkit. So I'm so excited for your tool to be done, because then we can just link to your tool.
And we can
great. You just saved me like lots of work. This is the content. It is not just exclusively focused on the learning ethically while abroad, because we also want to help students figure out, you know, how do you find an appropriate global health experience, and how do you prepare to go and be a learner and not a doer. And then this very last one is the oath that we ask them to sign. Now, we have a quiz they have to take, and then after they do that quiz, then they can print out this oath. And the oath is something, it seems kind of silly, but it's something they can carry with them and to use as evidence. And we've got it in a couple languages now. It'll be translated into multiple languages over the next year. That basically says, I'm a global ambassador for patient safety, and I can't do that. So it gives them the way to say no. We also worked with the Forum on Education Abroad. Martha Johnson, who's the director of our Learning Abroad Center, and we have the largest Learning Abroad Center in the country. I went over to her when we were talking about this issue, and I said, there's got to be a policy group for learning abroad, study abroad. And she said, oh, yeah, the Forum on Education Abroad is our policy group. And so she contacted them and said, they have a lot of different standards for study abroad programs, lots of them in a variety of different places. But they didn't have anything that was specific to health. And so what we did is we took their template on the standards that they've created. And this is an international organization, so they have people from all over the world that participate in their committees. I was on our committee had people from 7 countries, and many of them were the sending institutions, they were the host institutions, so we had that conversation. And they helped us to develop these guidelines. They aren't standards, they're actually guidelines. And they have all kinds of information in them. Now, are they relevant to the professional level programs? I think some of the information probably would be. I think some of the things you covered. So these were some of the things that we came up with in one of the sections that helped them to look at when you're evaluating international opportunities, what are some of the questions you should be asking? And what is the expected role of the student? Who's organizing the opportunity? How long have they been involved in the community? Are they connected to the community? A lot of the organizations that our student groups go with, we call them drop-in clinics, because they literally drop into the community, perform their activities, and then pull back out, and there's no connection into the community. Is the local community being compensated? What type of safety procedures and insurance and incident response is in place? What type of preparation in-country, support, and post-experience? Does the organization follow ethical best practices? We've created a number of programs at the University of Minnesota trying to use these best practices and standards, and we're in the process of evaluating them now to see how we do as far as putting students on the ground in those other countries and serving the need for students to be learners and not doers. And it's been interesting because one of our groups in Ecuador the Minnesota Study in Development. Our colleague there is a physician who also works with our medical school. And he's struggled for a while with separating out the function of the medical students and the pre-med students. And I think we now have a really worthwhile program. In fact, this summer we're offering a program that is focused exclusively on the social determinants of health. And it's a really worthwhile way for the students to understand the social issues that contribute to medicine. But our medical students will also be there, and they're going to let the pre-med students shadow them and watch them as they're doing the work that they're doing on the ground. So in summary, we think that global experiences are a good thing. If you're building a program for preclinical students, then you need to focus on the learning and you really helping students to understand that if you can't do it here, you shouldn't do it there. These are a number of resources that we used. Thank you.
Thank you, Tricia. I apologize for getting the wrong individual on that. Okay, I was asked to do a little bit of reflection, and then we're going to turn around for you to ask questions of any or all of the panelists. I was struck about a number of things. First of all, what incredible just geographic distribution from Minnesota to Florida to California to Delaware in the Mid-Atlantic region. So that's pretty amazing to see a panel that reflects all of that. And also reflect a general reflection of, look at the variance of the issues that you all address from undergraduate through residency and in post-residency practice. So that also was an interesting reflection. Just a couple of comments, starting with John, was really looking at the interdisciplinary work. I think all of you emphasized that. The structure, I think that's an important aspect that all of you emphasize, and John, you highlighted that particularly. I love that, thinking now internally, the partnerships, and several mentioned it. John, I know you talked quite a bit about the Delaware Academy of Medicine, and so the actual program and the information is not just for Christiana Care. It's open to the community. I know that personally because I'm on that mailing list, and it's an extensive one. I don't know how many non-Christiana Care employees come to that, but it is in the late afternoons, evenings, and hopefully a lot of people do come to that, and I thought that was great. I love the flexibility that you talked about for residents, and that we should say with all programs. And all of you, one directly or indirectly, talked about mentorship and the importance of mentoring, and that's certainly something that rang out completely, and the aspect of inclusion. So I thought that was interesting. Pilar, in your program, emphasized competencies. You referred to that. AAMC was mentioned later. Not only the ASPH or ASPPH now, Association of Schools and Programs of Public Health Competencies and Global Health, but AAMC and others are excellent ones. And all of you, or most of you, certainly talked about the need for competencies to look at standards. Those are really important. Evaluation was also emphasized, and many of you using both quantitative evaluation but also qualitative evaluation methodologies to really get input. And what's great is we're not just talking about input internally, but also input from the host country and the organizations and stakeholders that you're working with. So I thought that was really significant. Cultural competency, the long culture of humility, and those issues are vitally important. We could spend a lot of time talking about the issues, a few mentioned it, the issues of language training, cultural training, pre-going to that country. And what struck me, and I think all of us in the audience are aware of the incredible labor-intensive work that this requires on all of us, in most cases, not very heavily funded. So that shows talking about really a work of love and collaboration. So it's student oriented, it's residence oriented, it's the people who get that opportunity to go through this global health experience. And I thought that was also sort of resonated across all of that. Corinne, you and both Corinne and Tricia then really looked at the ethical issues, which is so important, of what are we doing on those experiences, and really looking at the weight standards. I had heard of it, but I didn't know the details. And my reflection of, I'm not sure, the acronym, of course, is weight, thinking of physical weight. I thought originally thinking of wait, W-A-I-T, in other words, hold off a minute, wait, let's reflect, let's do this right, let's think of ethics, let's think of standards. So I was thinking at it from that wait aspect of, hold on, don't just rush in. So, but I've never heard the word wait used in that term, but the standards and that process is really important. And so host interviews, looking at benefits and challenges, really engaging the this is a collaborative. This is an exchange. One of the things in the guidelines is that in developing these type of projects where U.S.-based students, residents, post-fellows, etc., go to other countries, what's the exchange? And that exchange should be they come here too, that they gain, their leaders are doing that. It led me to thinking of an article that was published in Health Promotion Practice by Ellen Plum in Philadelphia and Kathy Rowe in Northern California. So it was a case-based, I don't know if you had a chance to read it, it was early beginning of this year in Health Journal of Health Promotion Practice, two cases in Rwanda and Mexico from two different institutions, private and public, and some of the competencies and standards which required very much doing. And we talked, you know, Tricia, you talked about the learning aspect of it. So many of these were medical students, but it included nursing, PT, OT, and public health. They did, but what did they do? They weren't doing clinical practice. They were doing community health assessments and assessments of the community, addressing needs, sustainability, stability. So it wasn't clinical, it was, but that's an aspect of doing that medical students clearly could take a, and even undergraduates clearly could take a major role, certainly not in the area of direct patient care. So I wanted to mention that. I think the assessment process and tools, we really look forward to the future as these get developed and shared and linked and connected, I think are really important. And those the GAPS program that you mentioned, Tricia, the Global Ambassadors for Patient Safety, those that are focused in medical education or pre-med education, I think that's really important, as well as the forum as well. So that was sort of overall reflections, a lot of similarities and a lot of differences in perspectives that I think are helpful for this discussion. Before beginning, I just want to mention one thing. Are there any people here who have been Fulbright scholars or Fulbright fellows? Great, Gary has, and I want to mention it for those of you, and many of you in the audience, not most, have faculty appointments. I've been fortunate to be part of a Fulbright specialist program, which is you're on the list for 5 years, and you do short-term 2 to 6 week assignments. The category for that, for faculty, is global public health. It includes these types of initiatives that you can work with universities in other countries to do so. So I'd encourage you to consider maybe looking into that and consider applying for what's called a Fulbright specialist program over a 5-year period for those of you that have faculty appointments. At that point, we're going to turn it open to you and your questions or comments about what you've heard this morning.